A rich tradition. College Football Podcast is now live.
Hello and welcome to A Rich Tradition College Football Podcast. I'm Spencer Van Horn. He's Robert Stoltenbull. Two friends, one love, and that is college football. Roberto, how are you?
Man, I'm doing great. I really am.
Well, that's fantastic.
Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power came out this past week. I got to spend the weekend with my brother and my nieces and my sister-in-law, and I got to watch some awesome, awesome football. It was really all things were coming up, Robbie, this past week.
Well, that's fantastic to hear.
How was your week?
Good. We did well. We had a Blazer win on Thursday. Got some much needed rest on Friday, and then spent a good portion of the day watching college football as well. Went and celebrated the Georgia drubbing with my brother and nephew. So that was always fun. We watched the Florida game together as well. So we had a good weekend. Saw my nieces as well, or at least one of them. And so, yeah, plenty of family and football on a Labor Day weekend. It was very nice.
Did you watch Rings of Power yet?
Have I watched what now? No, I've not yet watched Ring of Powers. Which one is that on? Which
Amazon.
Service is that on?
Amazon.
So, no, I haven't gotten that one in. I'm trying to gain traction with the new Game of Thrones sludge fest. But I'm kind of trying to move through one thing at a time.
I understand. All right, Spencer, so before we jump into game reviews and our games of the week and my rankings that's going to upset everyone, let's talk about some games from over the weekend. Or let's talk about the big news that came out Friday just before week one really hits. Share that with us.
Yo, while I was asleep. We're getting 12 games for 12 teams for expansion. That the whichever committee it is got together and finally decided that 12 is the number, and we will be moving to a 12-team playoff. I think as soon as 24 and maybe 25, I think are the years there that they're 25. I think maybe they're shooting for, but they'd love to go 24 if possible. For a 12-team expanded playoff. All the expansionists have gotten what they've wanted.
Yeah, I think this is a really good thing overall. You and I have been pretty adamant that we are for we are for expansion for a multitude of reasons. I'm not going to do what some people do in this argument and insult anyone who doesn't agree with me. Like, that's probably been the thing that I've noticed and been like most frustrated with, is like that the people who take sides are like, will passive aggressively throw shots at the other side of people who don't agree with their take. I think it's better for the overall health of college football, from the teams in the SEC to the Big Ten, all the way over to the Pac-12 and Big 12. The one thing I don't like, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, because we haven't really talked about this, is I don't like that it's only the first round games that are going to be hosted on site.
Yeah, that's disappointing. At least there's something that's on site. I think you need to have as much on site as possible. But if it's only going to be that first round, then this is why I get to be hesitant. Yes, I think expansion is a good idea, but this starts to come to the point where this is where I get kind of if we're going to do this, then we need to do it. We don't need to do it and then shape it around what we already have. and oh, we got the bowl games. We got to stay to the bowl games. I don't understand what. I get you can do some of it with the bowl games. Whatever. I've not quite understood. My issue has been the people who are putting this together. Are they putting it together with the best possible outcomes in mind, or are they putting it together with the money in mind? And we want this to be attached to the bowl games so that the money in mind goes to those people who we've been greasing palms with for the last 100 years or whatever it is. So that's the part of this that always makes me frustrated is, yes, expansion sounds like a really good idea, and I think if we can do it right, it'll be good, but then you get things like this, and it's like, ah, that sounds like the money makers who are just interested in making the money and putting it into the right pockets. This sounds like this is them rearing their head, making their presence known.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. It all comes down to money. I hope that Harbaugh's desire and the Big Ten's desire for revenue sharing, I hope that occurs. But I also hope I hope these players get a piece of this revenue sharing, because there are teams who are going to go from what now playing 12 games, possibly 13 games if they met their conference title, to now what? They could play 3 or 4 more games. Is that right? Am I doing that math right?
Yeah, you could be looking 16, 17 games.
That they should be paid. They should be given part of this revenue share for that. But all in all, I think this is a good thing. I kind of hope it happens sooner than later, and that looks like it's going to be that may happen. Because right now it looks like the earliest is 2026, but they're trying to get that moved up quite a bit to 2024. Spencer, is there anything else that you wanted to add to this?
No, but I do think some of those worries, some of those legitimate worries about expanding the playoff do exist from the standpoint. I wonder if there's ever going to be a point where we get a meaningless playoff game. You know how we have meaningless bowl games? Do we ever get to a point where there's a meaningless playoff game? There's not really. It sounds weird to say that, but I think it also sounded weird at one time to say meaningless bowl game. And now we've got meaningless bowl games. At least that is the perception, that bowl games are meaningless. So I'm interested to know if that would ever happen.
Well, what do you mean by that? Do you mean a blowout? Because blowouts happen in September, like look what just happened this, you know, with Georgia and you know, in Oregon. Like the blowouts don't bother me. We've been having blowouts with 4 this whole time.
Right, but you and I have not been the ones that have been bothered by bowl games being meaningless. You and I are not the ones who are calling bowl games meaningless. What happens when the Utilihoos in Bristol, Connecticut start talking about first round playoff games between number 12 and number 1? What if they start talking about those being meaningless games? What if they start talking about, hey, you NFL pro running back who's got a chance to go number 5 in the NFL draft, that game's not important, man. You're going to get, you need to be prepared. You need to be healthy. You need to be ready to go for the pro ranks. What happens when those folks start piping up 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the line and they start telling pro players or potential pro players, just like they did with the bowl games, meaningless bowl games? This doesn't matter. You're not going to the championship. This doesn't matter. You're not going to get past number 1. And if you do, you're certainly not going to get past your second round game. So what's the point? You're get ready for the draft, kid.
Well, I don't know. Maybe
that's a small byproduct. Something that won't happen very often because it is a playoff game, and those quarterbacks or those running backs would say, hey, this is a little different than just a souvenir at the end of the year. This is a real chance. So maybe it'll be different.
I also think that I'm of the belief that there's going to start being more parity with the transfer and NIL market. We're already starting to see it in ways. Maybe not at the top with Georgia, Bama, and whatever. But that's not what I'm talking about. Parity from teams 4 to 15 or 4 to 17. I do think there's going to be more parity. We're starting to see that, I think, in small ways. But I mean, it's a good point. I don't know. I don't know if that's really going to happen or not. But it's something to think about, you know? Okay, Spencer, you have anything else to add here?
You certainly would be able to go back and see that. I think the graphic that was shown, Michigan State and Pittsburgh would have been in the playoff last year. So potentially having, and Ohio State would have been in. So all of those draft choices that opted out may not have opted out. Certainly the ones at Ohio State that would have, maybe those guys return, Chris Olave and such. And perhaps at Michigan State, the running back Kenneth Walker returns, and certainly Pittsburgh's Kenny Pickett, doesn't go, take the bowl game out, opt out of the bowl game. So it's teetering on which way it goes. So I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to soften the blow a little bit. Because I know you want to be excited about it, and I guess I get caught up in being hesitant about it.
No, it's okay. I get it.
And my hesitant to be clear, and I know I've already said it, but I just want to say it again. My hesitant to be clear is not that the product isn't going to be good or not that the product can't be good, but it's just like the example. ESPN over here or somebody else over here on some talk show starts filtering in this conversation about how something doesn't matter. Somebody from somewhere else starts infiltrating bad ideas, whether it's the money people who are directly connected or it's somebody else, which is weird to think ESPN, sort of started a thing that was led to being meaningless bowl games, but they played a hand in some form or fashion on that. And you're thinking to yourself, well, how would they get involved in that? Because it doesn't do them any good to have Christian McCaffrey opting out of bowl games. But somehow or another, their commentary helped lead that to happening. So it's these outside people that are going to screw with college football and make it, ugh. Okay, continue. Games.
Breakdowns. No, I'm good. All right, before we jump in to the game conversations, I wanted to share what our listeners said. I asked what's the best college football game that you watched this weekend? And we can go through these quickly. in terms of personal excitement, Georgia versus Oregon. In terms of just fun in general, North Carolina and App State. We'll talk about that in a minute. I don't know what game this is that my friend posted about. Not sure how many.
Red Sox game?
No, not sure how many watched the LI versus GMA game, but it was by far the best.
Say the initials again.
LI and GMA. I think he's commenting on something else and just being sarcastic. But anyway, my friend Matt Sattler, who is a huge Oregon fan, said, I don't even think I like college football anymore.
Nope, that'll do it. 46 points, that'll do it.
Yeah. Caleb King, he's a huge Florida fan, said the Utes at Florida was a fun one. my teacher friend, Britt Cunningham, he is a huge FSU fan. He just showed me a GIF of their mascot slamming the spear down.
Nice.
And Cody Dan said it was UGA versus Oregon. It was the only full game I watched. So thank you guys for listening and sharing that. But Spencer, let's dive in. What games do you want to talk about first?
So my best game of the weekend was Florida and Utah. Would you like to start there?
Sure.
Okay. So I have this theory in mind that there's not a perfect score to a football game, but that there is a range of scores that are perfect for a football game, and 29-6 is right there. Somebody mentioned App State and North Carolina being their favorite. That's too much scoring. I'd like to see a little bit more defense in a ball game like that. But to each his own, of course. And of course, scoring is exciting, and big plays are exciting, and the execution of all that stuff is exciting. So I get it. But when you can get 29-26 and games in that range, you've got just enough defense, you've got just enough offense. It's sort of a perfect setting of everything that's great about football. And you got that here. You didn't get bad offensive play, and then we just sort of stumbled into 29 points. I don't think you stumble into that. And the same thing with 26. There were good plays. There were good offensive plays. There were good drives. Both teams did a lot of things really well. Both teams, it was that power of, or that battle of the same kind of styles going at one another. And it worked out really well. And you got, I think if you're a Florida fan, you got the best possible version of your team overall under Billy Napier when it comes to playing against other great teams. If you can get this version of your team against the other good teams on your schedule, you're in a really good spot to win a lot of those games. So I thought that this was the best game of the weekend. Scoring, defensive stands, obviously the goal line stand for Florida was really great for them. And yeah, I thought Utah and Florida, best game of the weekend. What an incredible ball game, and welcome Anthony Richardson to college football.
So just really quickly, because I think you did well. I'm going to talk about the positive for Utah first. This game is so close. Like I don't necessarily think I think less of Utah now. The game was just so close. Like it literally came down to a 1 yard play, to a 2 yard play. There's a world in which he throws it away, and then the very next play they get a touchdown, or vice, you know, or something along that, or they go to overtime and Utah wins. Like this is not some like, oh, the best team in the Pac-12 goes down south and gets stomped, right? Like, which is what a lot of people were worried about or felt could happen. That's not what happened here. Utah scheduled this game. They went and they showed up and they played incredibly well. Cam Rising, I still believe in Cam Rising. I still believe that this team can go 11-1. I really do. they have some issues, obviously. But, what team doesn't? Well, we found out there's probably two teams that don't. But they've got some things to work on. But I just was impressed by them. They handled themselves very well in the swamp. And I do think that they win this game. I do think Florida won this game to a degree because of the swamp. Like it did. It mattered. It helped. And that's why this game next year at Utah is going to be so interesting to me. Because it'll probably be incredibly loud. It'll just be smaller, you know, in venue. I want to talk about Florida though. Florida had the talent last year to go 9-3, 10-2, and they ended up going whatever it was. It wasn't 10-2. It wasn't 9-3 last year. They got shellacked by Georgia, got steamrolled by South Carolina, you know, at the end of the year. You didn't really know what this team was. And Anthony Richardson shined. I mean, you could nitpick some things But I'm not going to do that today. When we talk about the preview of next week's game or this upcoming week's game, that's whenever I'm going to talk about that. But the review of this is that Anthony Richardson played incredible. He was a playmaker. He made the plays that he had to make. Do I think he's Cam Newton or Vince Young? No, he played one freaking game. So I'm not going to put some standard on him that's not fair. But I am going to say that Billy Napier has his team already just playing with a confidence in week one that I was not expecting. Okay. So yeah, that's my praise. I'll talk about the critiques, you know, when we talk about the Florida-Kentucky game coming up. But I have a lot of praise for Florida, and I have some praise for Utah too. It was a very fun game. Do you have anything to add to that, or can I go to my game of the week weekend?
Well, I was just going to say you mentioned confidence, and I think that's a big point or a big factor there is when Florida's into it, and when Florida was into it last year, they were really good. They took mm-hmm. Bama right down to the wire when they were into it. And I think they played with a lot of confidence. I think they put Anthony Richardson in a lot of great spots. He only threw for 168 yards. And when that happens, and I think he was like 5 of 6 on play action plays. And I mean, he was really, really good in the spaces that they asked him to be really, really good in. And that's a whole bunch of coaching, I think. And so, yeah, I give Billy Napier and his staff a ton of credit for the way that the Gators were not only prepared, but for the way that they were motivated to play in that ball game on Saturday night. Your favorite game of the week was?
West Virginia Pitt. There's a case that could have been made that it was Penn State, excuse me, the Penn State game. But it was just so fun watching these two really good quarterbacks deal the ball left and right. Because Penn State Purdue was back and forth in a really great game. We'll talk about that game in a minute. But West Virginia Pitt, man. I was watching this game while we were driving to Kentucky. I wasn't driving. Lisa was driving. But I was watching this, and, man, it was just so much fun. Kevin Slovis was slinging it. JT Daniels was slinging it. Unfortunately, his players were also dropping the freaking ball. Pittsburgh wins on a botched catch, pick six. And I didn't think he was fluky. And, you know, obviously he should have caught the ball. But I just mean, like, This game was so tight, it was going to be the first one to make a mistake that was going to win the game, or that, you know, the other team was going to win, the first team to make a mistake. And I will talk more about Pittsburgh here in a minute. But I just want to praise West Virginia, because West Virginia's defense and their offensive line have taken strides in directions that I did not expect them to very, like, quicker than I expected to. They were protecting JT Daniels pretty dang well. The biggest negative on West Virginia is they had way too many drops, because JT Daniels was out there dropping dimes. But still, my biggest problem with JT Daniels, and this still holds true even after a year, man, he can get kind of robotic moving, or like his feet are in cement in that pocket. He does not like to move out of that pocket. And that kind of hurt them a couple of times, but I really enjoyed this game. So,
yeah, I was looking. JT had 5 drops
mm-hmm.
In the ball game, and he was 23 of 40. So, if you were to just give him 3 more and give him 26 completions, I mean, he's at 65%, and no telling how many more yards, more first downs, more opportunities, if there's another touchdown in there somewhere. So, yeah, I mean, it really changes the dynamic of things, what those drops can mean. And there were lots of quarterbacks with those issues over the weekend. But, yeah.
And the game.
That's a good choice.
The game really did, like, the game really did come down to who had the ball last. And you know what I'm saying? Like it was just such a good game. Okay, yeah, I'll stop talking about it. All right. What game you want to go to next? Because I know we got a lot to cover, really, you know, cover quickly.
All right, so Georgia explodes on Oregon. I think Stetson Bennett is locked all the way in right now. A full offseason for him.
Would you agree?
I think this and the game against Michigan are pretty close to one another.
All right.
This one's obviously at the beginning of the year, and I think the thing that sticks out here more to me for Stetson is he's got a healthy group of people around him.
Yeah.
And he did some things in this ball game that maybe he didn't have to do in the Michigan game. Some of the pressure, some of the sidestepping, a couple of things. And maybe you could say he was a little crisper here. But I don't know. I think those two are neck and neck. And if you wanted to say this one was the best one, I think that's fine. But yeah, Stetson is locked in. But I think more importantly, like we talked about in the offseason, the weapons around him are healthy and are at full go at his disposal.
I have a hot take, especially after listening to people talk about this game, talk about Stetson Bennett over the past 2 days. I think Stetson Bennett's going to get drafted in the NFL.
If he keeps it up, for sure.
Yeah, I feel fairly confident. Like, I don't care about the Heisman Trophy.
I mean, they drafted Tim Tebow, so you know, I mean,
yeah.
I certainly draft this guy.
I don't care about Heisman hopefuls. I don't care about that. There are people in the NFL who are now praising and looking at Stetson Bennett a lot differently. I think he's gonna get drafted. Okay. Next game, I want to make mention of this because I should have said we should have probably just went in chronological order, but that's on me. Penn State Purdue. Spencer, who do you trust more, Bo Nix or Sean Clifford?
Well, at this point, it's 100% Sean Clifford.
It absolutely is. However, before this past weekend, was there a confident answer to that?
Probably. No, there wasn't a confident answer to that. No.
And let's be honest. Sean Clifford tried to give the game away. Back-to-back drives. Well, the first drive, he throws an interception. Next drive, he just has two horrible passes once again. Purdue, all they have to do is eat clock and get two first downs, and they're going to win this game. But they try to go kill shot, and they try to throw the ball numerous times, and they give Sean Clifford the ball one more time, and that dude just straightens up. He mans up. He leads them on an incredible drive, and he takes them down to win the game. This kid is my friend who is a huge Penn State fan. He's like, the Clifford giveth and the Clifford taketh away. And that's exactly what he does. He will take lives off of you, years off your life, but he will also give it to you with joy, with a drive like that. Purdue, I picked Purdue to upset Penn State. I don't regret that pick. Purdue showed that they belong. Purdue showed actually that their defense might not be wet paper towel like it has been in years past. And O'Connell dealt. He 29 completions for 356 yards. But the thing that caught me off guard most also was that they were able to run the ball as well as they did. Anything else you want to add there, or you want to move on?
No, I only saw a little bit of that game. Got a chance to see the interception. It kind of felt like the game was going away, and just as I was able to get into bed, I saw that Clifford had straightened back up. So I kind of thought, I don't think I'll watch any more Penn State games this year, because when I was watching, he was throwing interceptions and not playing well. And then when I turned it off, he straightened back up. So I won't watch any more Sean Clifford this year.
Okay. Hear that, Penn State fans.
That'll be my duty for Penn State there. I feel like if that's going to be if I'm the unlucky charm there, I want everybody to succeed, Robbie. I want everybody to win. Mm-hmm. So.
All right, let's talk about two games that got super weird. and we're going to talk about them in tandem. NC State, East Carolina, North Carolina, App State.
Yeah.
How about I feel like North Carolina State is just kind of like a win and survive kind of thing. North Carolina, I'm incredibly worried about them.
Yeah, you were expecting some improvements. You were expecting the talent that they have. I was listening to a North Carolina fan talk about it over the weekend, and they were very disheartened about the idea that there's talent on the defense, but somehow or another, it's not being they were very unhappy with Gene Chizik, the defensive coordinator there for the Tar Heels. So, yeah, I think that would be frustrating because I think, Rob, you can go back and look at all the recruiting classes and there's talent being brought in on defense that's not showing up on the field right now. And so, that's super disheartening for the Tar Heels. Now, App State, the weird thing is that App State's a good program too.
They
have been for a long time. But still, 40 points in the fourth quarter, that's too much.
Yeah. just to add to this, to the North Carolina, I told Spencer, or we'll talk about that in a minute. Never mind. I'm concerned for North Carolina, but Drake May's a dude. NC State, I felt so bad for that East Carolina kicker. He misses a PAT earlier in the game, which cost them a point. And then they drive down to win the game.
Cost them tying the game, yeah.
And it cost them tying the game. But then they drive down to win the game, to kick a field goal to win it, misses again.
How long was that field goal to win it?
It wasn't.
Do you remember?
Maybe 40, 42 yards. It wasn't astronomical. It wasn't a hard thing.
But it wasn't a chip shot either.
No. And I may be wrong. It may not have been 42. I'll look real quick since you asked. So
it wasn't 22, I guess is what I'm saying.
You talk.
I mean, he had to kick a field goal there and pushed it to the right.
I was dead on 42 yard field goal.
So yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody had a worse weekend than that kid.
No. Yeah, it was his. I was trying to do the Notre Dame game last. Oh, let's talk.
Wait a minute, real quick. Hold on. North Carolina State, are we not going to say anything about Devin Leary? Because he didn't play super well this weekend, I don't recall.
That's just kind of in summation for them. For me, it's week one. They played a team they shouldn't have been playing on the road. Quit playing these decent teams on the road week one. I just think it was win and survive. Like, I really do. I agree Devin Leary didn't play great, but I think I care more about what happens over the next 2 weeks with NC State than I do today. Like, when they play Texas Tech in 2 weeks, that game to me tells me more than Saturday. But I mean, what do you want to add? Because you brought it up, because I obviously want to say something.
I just lost my thought. I just felt like obviously he doesn't play super stellar in this game. 17 of 33. He got a pretty low grade from Pro Football Focus. He threw an interception that helped set up, ECU getting as close as they did in the ball game. I mean, his interception comes pretty late there in the fourth quarter. So just kind of felt like we really talked up Devin Leary a lot and he kind of turns in a dud. Had this been Sean Clifford or Bo Nix, and Bo Nix turned in a dud of his own, but feel like we would have certainly this seems to be something that definitely at the very least has to be corrected pretty soon for North Carolina State because they can't mail it. I mean, you certainly got to make an improvement from week one to week two here.
No, I agree.
A lot of aspirations.
And for those that don't know, like a lot of NFL folk love Devin Leary. They think he has a ton of tangibles to make it in the NFL. I'm trying not to overreact, you know. And I'm not saying you. I'm not saying you are, but I'm just trying not to. So I don't have a lot to analyze there. Trying to think if there's any other game that I wanted to mention before we got into the big one. Cincinnati, Arkansas. Spencer, is it safe to say that Cincinnati may already be ready to go to the Big 12?
I think they are. I think that's probably my biggest takeaway from the game is that Cincinnati as a group of five team lost as much to the NFL that group of five teams don't put into the NFL. And they came right back out and stood toe to toe with a team that a lot of people think could be right there in the thick of a divisional race with Alabama and Texas A&M. So
on the road too.
Yeah. And did it on the road. Now I do think that Arkansas has had plenty on their team to replace from last year to this year. And I think we'll see them improve as the season goes on because those new starters are, taking over their new roles and such. So I think they'll get better as the season goes on. But yeah, no, I give a ton of credit to Luke Fickell for having his group prepared and ready to go on the road against a really talented, well-coached team and play them to 7 points covered.
Yeah, as much as I respect Arkansas and KJ Jefferson and Sam Pittman and Briles, their OC, they've got to develop a passing game very quickly because they're not going to be able to run all the time. They're going to have to throw. They're going to have to throw quite a bit at times because there's defensive lines that are much better than Cincinnati's that are going to force them to have to throw. And I like KJ Jefferson. I really do. But him and Hazelwood have got to get on the page soon, get on a good page sooner than they have been. Spencer, I just want to make mention. I unfortunately watched the Iowa San Diego State game. This may quite honestly have been the worst football game I've ever watched. It was definitely the most boring.
Well, yeah, at VSU, my sports information director is from Iowa, and he's a big Hawkeyes fan. And I saw a tweet earlier today that mentioned that made the joke that the biggest crime of the weekend is that Iowa forced the children in the hospital to watch that game. and he laughed.
Oh, that's hilarious. He laughed
pretty hard at that one. It was, it was pretty bad. Your defense outscores your offense with two safeties and 4 points to their three. Pretty rough weekend. And just to put it in more context, they score only 7 total without a touchdown, and App State had 40 in the fourth quarter alone.
Mm-hmm. They had, how am I forgetting their head coach's name? Help me here. Ferentz, right?
Ferentz
has an opportunity to hire a better offense coordinator. He doesn't. He promotes his son. They have an opportunity to go get a decent quarterback in the transfer portal when there was a gazillion quarterbacks. He doesn't. He sticks with Spencer Petras, and he made his bed, and now he's going to lay in it because that offense is – last year was awful. This is another level, bro. And I don't know how they're going to fix this in a week. Spencer, last game before we jump into the rankings and previews. Ohio State, Notre Dame. What are some takeaways that you have?
I thought you could certainly look over at Notre Dame's way and think, boy, had you guys had, you know, and I know the line has been some this week already has been, man, if you had told me Notre Dame was going to score 10 points, I would have thought they got beat by 30. And I agree. It's not just some weird take. It is, I think it's a good way of looking at it that would to think, yeah, had Notre Dame only scored 10 points in the game, or you told me that ahead of time, you would have thought Ohio State took them to town. And give Notre Dame a ton of credit. They did a lot of things really well defensively against a team that's probably going to be really, really good offensively at some point this season. And Notre Dame kept them off balance or kept them from finding a groove. And they had some help with, I guess, some players being out. But ultimately, Notre Dame is still going to be a really good football team. And they'll probably be better offensively. This is one of those games that you're probably thinking, man, I'd like to see this week 8, week 9. And when both of these teams are playing at maybe they're a little more, a little bit more on the same page with one another. I was just listening to somebody make the point of, you know, college football doesn't have a preseason. These guys are hitting the ground running, and not just hitting the ground running, but they are hitting. I mean, Notre Dame's playing Ohio State at the beginning of the year. So you're coming right out of the gate with a huge game. And, you know, at some point, some of those games aren't going to go well. Not everybody's going to play the way Georgia played. Not everybody's going to be on the same page and on the right track. So I think you give both teams credit for keeping the game, Ohio State credit for pulling away, but Notre Dame credit for keeping it close when both teams maybe weren't playing the same way they'll be playing later on in the year.
Yeah, for me, a little concerned about Bryce Young. C.J. Stroud didn't necessarily crush it during this game. However, that defense is, I'm not saying that they are a top five defense by any means, but I am going to say that they are leaps and bounds better than they were last year. And that you can just tell that by one game. Just the way they play their assignments, the way they move, the way they were just able to create pressure at times. Like they're a different team. And I know that that is, I know they're super thankful to be in that position. Notre Dame is much better than even I thought they were going to be. You know, second half is not great. You know, Ohio State made adjustments to shut them down. Notre Dame lost their number one receiver, you know, about 2 or 3 weeks before the season started. And it showed that they don't have any speed on the outside, and that really hurt them because they couldn't attack downfield. But to me, Notre Dame showed me that they belonged, and that's something that I was very thankful for. But they didn't get blown out, and that's what everyone that's what everyone said was going to happen, and it didn't. So I want to try to, you know, be positive in that regard. So, anything else, Spencer?
No, I don't think so. I'm trying to make sure I didn't have anything else written down for that ball game. And Ohio State only scored as few as 27 points a game, or their lowest scoring total last year was 27. So Notre Dame right out of the gate holds them to 21. And again, they exited some players to the NFL, so it's not as if they just, you know, are going to wake up and go right at it. But I think you can give Notre Dame some pretty good credit for taking advantage of Ohio State being out of sync and keeping them out of sync.
No, I would agree. All right, Spence, let's talk about my rankings. Have you had a chance to look at these yet?
No. Do you have them written down somewhere? I did not see them.
Yeah, I posted them on the Facebooks.
Facebooks or okay.
Both on Facebook and Twitter. Hold on, I'm about to cough.
All right.
Okay. Here are my here is my Be Great poll week two. Starting from 1 to 10. Bama, UGA, Ohio State, Michigan, Baylor, Oklahoma, A&M, USC, BYU, and Notre Dame.
What has USC at number 8? What about them is top 10 worthy?
I only got to watch a little bit. It's Rice. Like, it's a garbage team. But, man, I really liked seeing Caleb Williams sling it. I liked watching Jordan Addison run around. Defensively, they took care of business, but their offense is going to be gross. And this is just for right now. This is just week one. You know, I didn't feel comfortable putting Florida in there. I didn't feel comfortable putting NC State in there. I didn't really feel comfortable with other teams around them. And USC was already in that, like, 12 to 15 range for me. And then with the losses that happened, like, I just had to move some things around because I dropped Clemson completely out of my top 10 because I was just so disappointed in them. I got to see them live last night, and I'm just not impressed. So, yeah. What else you got?
Even with Clemson's defense and the way that we know and expect them to be playing?
Yeah. Because even if, you know, their front seven is as good or is really talented, there were times where Georgia Tech was able to keep them at bay and not get pressure on Josh or Jeff Sims. And there were times where they were able to run at Clemson. Now, look, I know their yards per carry is bad. Like, a mixture of you and I talked about this, you know, earlier today. The lack of skill position guys really hurt Jeff Sims and their offensive coordinator, but just nothing about Clemson jumped off the page to me at all. And their DJ is still broken. Their offensive line is still a problem. Their wide receivers couldn't get separation on Georgia Tech DBs. And Jeff Sims got left out to dry numerous times because of drop passes. And with all that said, Clemson was just not, no, I just did not care for them at all on Monday.
Explain BYU at number 9 ahead of Notre Dame.
Well, I can't be stupid and say Notre Dame shouldn't move at all. They lost. They should drop down. They only scored 10 points total. 10 of those they scored in the first half. On the road at Ohio State, I think they did show me that they're still a top 10 team. But when I look at BYU and I look at how they handled business, they took care of what they needed to take care of, and they scored 50 points, 28 points in the first quarter. They scored 28 points and gave up 0 points in the first quarter to South Florida. And I know South Florida is not any, you know, nothing, not a big deal, but they could have put 70 on South Florida if they wanted to, but they pull back. Hall is a dude. Jaren Hall is a dude. They play Baylor this weekend, and I just think it's going to be a really good matchup. And I think BYU deserves to get more recognition. And if they go into Baylor and they win this game, I think everyone else will feel the same way. Do you hate that, or?
No. Who's Jaren Hall, by the way?
Their quarterback.
Okay. And then why is Georgia number 2 behind Alabama at number 1 when Alabama beat up on Utah State and Georgia whooped a top 15 team out of the AP poll? Not just a top 15 team, but whooped them 40, yeah, you know, by 46 points.
Well, going into last week, I don't know if you saw last week's rankings. I had Alabama number 1. I had Georgia 4. I moved Georgia up 2 spots over a Utah team that is now out of the top 10. I obviously put them over Ohio State, but Bama didn't necessarily show me anything that didn't They didn't show me any reason to drop them. If that makes sense.
Fair enough. And then I think I'm fine with everything else.
Okay. All right. It's picks time, Spencer.
Picks time. Very good. All right, go ahead.
You've got the list. Let's go through it.
All right, so we will start with, let's start at the bottom of my list, Texas A&M and App State. App State just got done scoring a whole bunch of points against North Carolina. A&M just shut out Sam Houston. This now looks like a nice weekend for Haynes King to kind of continue to get himself warmed up. If there's only so much App State can do to improve their defense from week one to week two. You know, how do you feel about Haynes King going up against that defense that just gave up 60 plus to a really good North Carolina team?
Spencer, is it crazy that I feel a little concerned about this game?
For who?
For A&M? Yeah. Because I watched the first two quarters of that A&M game this past weekend. And yes, I know that they had a huge rain delay. But even before the rain delay, Haynes King did not look good. Haynes King looked bad in those first couple of drives. I'm not saying App State's going to win this game. I think App State covers. I think A&M wins. But I am, this is just kind of one of those, like, hey, guys, just keep your eye on this game. That's all I'm going to say. Keep your eye on this game. What do you think?
I like A&M. I think their defense is better than what App State saw last week. And that group obviously kept things in check for them this past weekend against Sam Houston. And again, it's only Sam Houston. But I think defensively they played well enough. And offensively, you're looking at a group that's sort of finding their way. Haynes King hadn't played football in a long time. And I think he improved as the game went on. And I think that's going to be good for them moving forward. And like we said, maybe going up against App State this weekend with the game underneath their belt will be good for them. I like Texas A&M to get by. I won't say handily, but I think they'll cover.
Do you think there's any possible way for an upset here? Did you say no?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, obviously it's college football, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to put you in a box. Like, I guess what I mean is, like, it would you be shocked and awed if it's third going in the fourth quarter and things are tight?
I probably would be surprised, yes, because again, I'm expecting Texas A&M to
handle business.
I'm expecting them to have a progression from week one to week two that will be better than whatever App State does from week one to week two.
Okay. Next game.
All right. Next game on the list is South Carolina and Arkansas. A lot of people not necessarily overwhelmed by Arkansas's performance this past weekend. I feel like this game might be on people's radar a little bit more. And South Carolina, though, did pull away from Georgia State, of all people, this weekend. How do you feel about Arkansas and South Carolina? Any interest here?
There's tons of interest because I think Arkansas is going to beat them. Like
a drum?
No. But I think they're going to beat them. I think they may actually cover, too. It's 8.5. Look, and here's one of the reasons why. Arkansas runs this like three, bring three, drop eight kind of thing. Spencer Rattler at times loves to force a ball where it shouldn't. I could easily see some tip balls or some interceptions or some mistakes be made. I don't think South Carolina is ready for SEC football, the big boy SEC football. And yeah, give me Arkansas.
Yeah, I think I'll have Arkansas here as well. I mean, Rattler didn't seem to play stellar this past weekend against Georgia State. I think he threw 37 passes, and I don't even know if he went for 200 yards or not.
He did not.
If he did, he barely went over 200. So, yeah, I don't love Spencer Rattler in this spot at all. So, yeah, give me Arkansas.
Okay.
All right, a game that just got a little more interesting for the weekend, but I think it also maybe it got a little less interesting for the weekend. But then again, it'll be Sam Hartman's first game back for the season, and we're not sure exactly what he was out with, so we're not sure what he's been able to work on. So how ready is he to just slide right into a ball game against a team in Vanderbilt who has played two games already? So they've got a little bit of a leg up, and they've got a spark plug at quarterback. Could Vandy surpass their win total by surprising Wake Forest this weekend?
Jeez Louise. You know, if you would have told me 3 weeks ago, asked me this question, I would say, of course not. That's absurd. But Vandy hasn't looked horrible, bro. Right?
Well, they had led 35-10 against Elon and only won 40-31 or something like that. So they had their moments there in the second half of that game.
What am I playing around? Wake Forest. Wake Forest wins. They cover. They go into SEC country and win. And Danny Cannell has some smart comment.
That's all it took there, wasn't it? Just 35-10.
Yeah.
Lee didn't hang on for very long. Fair enough.
I had to think out loud for a minute.
Sure. Wake Forest, but I think Mike Wright for Vanderbilt could keep things close. They've got to protect him. They've got to, you know, and he's got to protect himself. He's as thin as a pencil. I mean, he's not much, Mike Wright. So they're going to have to keep him healthy in games like this, where Wake may not be a outstanding defense, but I mean, they're going to do a lot more to you than I think Hawaii and Elon. All right. So we both like A&M, Arc, and Wake. BYU, Baylor. Surprisingly sneaky game for the weekend, I think.
You go first.
Oh boy. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. So I don't know a ton about either team, but I do know that Dave Naranda has a ton of respect. I did see that Blake Shapen, the quarterback for Baylor, had one of the best grades from Pro Football Focus at the quarterback position this weekend, from this past weekend. They won that ball game. So, and I know you just got done talking very glowingly of BYU. I like Baylor to be very tight in the division or a conference conversation there in the Big 12, and obviously this loss, a loss here, would not ruin any of that. But I think Baylor probably gets this win, and it's probably close. But I like Baylor. I'll take Baylor.
Give me the upset.
Are you writing these down, or am I writing these down?
Well, I'll answer it this way. I have not been writing these down. Okay.
You're more than welcome to go ahead and start doing that.
Okay. I think an upset's going to happen here this weekend. I don't know where. Why not here? I don't doubt Baylor. This is not an anti-Baylor thing. This is a, I think BYU is going to make some noise this year. And I think that this is how they start. If they go into Baylor and they upset them, like, it would be awesome. And I think they can. I think they have one of the best quarterbacks in the league, in Jaren Hall. So yeah, give me them to win.
Yeah, I was gonna look real quick. Bill Conley's S&P Plus has BYU by 1 point over Baylor, 26-25.
And so see, I didn't even know that.
It's a dead heat. It's a dead heat. All right, I like Baylor. You like BYU.
Yeah, man.
Okay, so USC, Stanford. Stanford's got a new passing game that they've been working on the last couple of years. It looked good in week one. Obviously, USC's got all the explosiveness. They had 4 interceptions against good old Rice this weekend, but this might not be their first, I guess it's their first big test, but it won't be the biggest test, obviously, and it won't be as big as some of the other big tests that they've got for USC, but this is at least a formidable coaching staff, a collection of good players, the next step in the direction for USC. Do you see Stanford in any way figuring something out to upset the Trojans?
No. I think USC is going to win. Until Stanford shows me, like in a big game, that they can upset, that they can play with the big boys again, I'm going to pick against them. I'm going to fade them.
Yeah, I'm not going to be so personal about it, but I like,
I'm not going to be offended by your attacks.
Yeah, for sure. I'll take USC to win here as well. Probably got enough firepower. I expect Stanford. I'm going to hope Stanford can keep it close. I don't need to lie. I will hope Stanford can try to keep it close with their newfound passing attack. Tanner McKee was very good in week one, but they didn't play much of anybody. I don't remember who, but not much of anybody.
Okay.
Iowa State. This it feels like it shouldn't be close, but it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I like Iowa State.
Same. I don't have a lot to add. Iowa State.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah, they had a. Go ahead.
If Iowa State loses this game, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but if Iowa wins this game, Iowa State, you really need to maybe consider a different coach.
Wait a minute. Say that one more time.
If Iowa State loses this game, you may need to consider getting a new coach, because Campbell has yet to beat Iowa. And this is literally the worst rendition of Iowa that he will have faced.
Yeah. This doesn't set up good for him coming out of that game. It's almost more pressure on him than it is Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter Deckers was 25 of 31, 80%, 293 and 4 touchdowns. He did throw an interception for Iowa State in their opening game of the weekend. So it looks like Hunter Deckers is in good shape at quarterback for the Cyclones, taking over there for Brock Purdy.
Yeah, Iowa State.
All right, Florida and Kentucky. Lots of people are sort of teetering towards overreacting to how great Anthony Richardson was, sort of how well that, that how well he played. But again, I think the Florida coaching staff put him in a lot of really good positions. What happens when some of that's negated? What happens when they force him into things he doesn't like? What happens when, a formidable team steps up? Not that Utah wasn't, but what happens when someone's able to, punch him in the mouth a little bit? I don't know if Kentucky can do that, but we'll, we'll certainly get a shot at it this weekend. I don't think the book is, I don't think Anthony Richardson has arrived quite the way some people are making it sound like. He was very much protected in certain ways from the game plan, from my opinion, there against Utah.
I wish this is one of those times where I wish that we were recording like on a Thursday or Friday. So we'd know who's going to be who if these suspensions are going to be there.
Well, I did hear earlier today that the people who are out for Kentucky are out.
Oh, well, then there's no conversation here. It's Florida.
You think it's Florida big or?
Yeah. I think it's Florida big. Unless an injury happens for Florida against Florida, I think it's Florida big.
All right, you said you had criticisms for Florida. So what does that look like?
I'm sorry. Say that again.
It sounded like you had criticisms for Florida earlier. What does that sound like?
Okay, I think the depth on the defensive line is still going to be a problem. I think it became a problem in the second half against Utah because they were able to run the ball so well effectively, and Cam Rising was able to break pocket so often. Anthony Richardson, while played incredible and made plays when he had to, I still think he had trouble at times hitting certain passes within the 15 to 20 range. He can chunk it deep. I also don't think that they have, like, there's still not a wide receiver on this team that I fear, that a team fears. It's really, hey, we fear Anthony Richardson. And that's fair. He's a baller. I think that this Florida team is limited this year, but they can run the ball. I don't know how well they can pass block. They can run block, but I don't know how well they can pass block. Or I'm sorry. I don't know how well they can run block consistently. Because outside of Richardson being able to scramble, and I just messed it up again. They were able to run the ball well. They were not able to protect Anthony Richardson very well because he had to break containment. He had to break out of the pocket numerous times. So I'm concerned about that. But with Kentucky having, I think it's like, what is it, six? It's six or seven starters either out for suspensions or injuries. That, to me, is enough of a deal breaker for this game. So, I mean, do you disagree with anything I just said, by the way?
So, I think for Kentucky, I'll be interested to see how well they test Florida's pass defense. I don't think Utah went to that quite as much as maybe they could have. With the suspensions that I saw earlier today, I'm anticipating that Kentucky will go another week not running the ball super well, thus putting the ball into the hands of Will Levis. He did throw 300 yards this weekend. They moved the ball pretty well through the air. So with that in mind, I think you could definitely see Florida's pass defense being tested by Will Levis. To what effectiveness will it be for another 300 yards? I don't know, but he's going to have an opportunity to throw the ball pretty good against them, and we'll see how well they hold up here this coming weekend. But like you said, with the suspensions, I don't know. I might have misspoke in terms of who all is going to be out, but I definitely saw that there are going to be like three players that are still out for this upcoming weekend. So I'm not sure which ones are returning, which ones are going to be out specifically, but I know Rodriguez at running back is out, and I felt like one of the other ones was a linebacker or a defensive lineman. So I think I like Florida to win here as well. I don't know if Kentucky has a difference maker quite like Anthony Richardson, and I don't know if they have enough on defense to corral him. So sort of in a similar way to Utah, I think Florida probably wins this game, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's another close one.
Okay.
Next game on the list, Wisconsin and Washington. Give me Wisconsin.
Is it Washington or Washington State? I don't have a
ton for this one. Sorry, Wisconsin and Washington State.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that. Who you got? Break this down.
Yeah, I'm going with Wisconsin here. I don't have a ton for this ball game. But Washington State played well against the run last week against big old bad Idaho. But Wisconsin's a different kind of running group. And from the looks of it, they're still rocking and rolling, ready to go. The big thing here will be Graham Mertz. How well does he play against another group of five team? He played well in their win over the weekend. Can he, you know, transfer some of that over into week two? That'll be a big deal, but I think Wisconsin will continue to do what they do very, very well. And I don't know if Washington State's quite ready to keep up with the kind of ground game that Wisconsin likes to employ.
English. Where's this game at? I'm sorry.
Ooh, that I don't have right in front of me.
Hold on, it's at Wisconsin.
Yeah, Madison.
You know what? Braylon Allen looked so gross last week. He's underappreciated across the country. Give me Wisconsin and give him to me, probably big. But I think Washington State's going to score some points. I'll say that.
Okay. Graham Mertz was the third rated offensive player at quarterback, and he was the highest rated passer in the Big Ten this weekend. He just edged out C.J. Stroud. He had 13 yards, almost 14 yards per attempt, did Graham Mertz. So if they've found a rhythm for him, then it could be very good for Wisconsin this weekend against Washington State. All right, Bama, Texas, or Pitt, Tennessee?
Bama, Texas. Because it's the easier one.
Yeah, I'd love for there to be some sort of something or another. I think this will be a lot of pageantry. I think there will be a lot of hoopla. And heck, maybe Texas keeps it close for a little while. But this will be the one with the storylines. It'll be the one with all the pomp and circumstance. But it very easily could be the one that also just ends up being a dud. And because it turns out it's pretty gruesome pretty quickly.
Quinn Ewers is going to get.
I think Will Anderson could be facing freshman at tackle.
Dude, he's going to eat. He is going to eat and eat and eat. Yeah. Give me Bama. I don't even know how to say, like, with a straight face, like, they can maybe keep it close. I don't think they keep it close. I think they handle business. And I think Will Anderson.
Yeah, I think the only. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think he gets like four sacks. Go ahead.
I was just going to add, if keeping it close looks like anything, maybe that's some sort of quick passing game, RPOs, get rid of the ball quickly. Screens and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. Get it out fast. I think has to be a part of the early part of the game plan there. Steve Sarkisian knows Will Anderson and he knows those guys better than maybe some other offensive coordinators do. So maybe he can figure something out a little bit that would say, not figure something out, but have some sort of answer that says, all right, this is what we're going to try. And maybe it gives them a little bit of a play or two here or there.
Okay. No, I could see that.
Pitt and Tennessee. This is a highly anticipated game, especially now that Pitt's come off of the win. Tennessee looked really good in their first game of the season, albeit with Ball State. Is there any, now this was Thursday of last week for Pitt. Hangovers, you can kind of avoid hangover from there, right? You kind of get an extra couple of days to prepare. Hangover stuff can be pushed away, or how do you feel about hangover for Pitt coming off the big win over over the backyard rival there, you know, after not playing it for a long, long time?
I think West Virginia ran on them way more than I thought they would be able to.
Yeah.
This is the hard, I think this is like the hardest game to pick. You know?
Yeah. I can see that. I'm taking Tennessee. Something tells me that Pat Narduzzi is going to be, now I know he's irritated with the idea of, you know, they beat Tennessee last year, they're ACC champions, and they're underdogs this year. So I know he's already been a little mouthy about that and being disrespected and that sort of thing. And they certainly came out and threw the ball plenty with Keaton Slovis this year. After all that hullabaloo about not running it enough last year. So I think some of that stuff is behind you, and you could see a little bit of a shootout here between these two teams.
Yeah.
So how does Pitt do with the tempo? And who do you like better, Keaton Slovis or Hendon Hooker? And part of me says I want Hendon Hooker before I want Keaton Slovis.
Yeah, but I may want Pittsburgh's defense over Tennessee's.
Fair enough.
Give me Pitt.
Give me Tennessee.
Give me Pitt. It's at Pitt. What's the number right now? Tennessee's under a touchdown favorite right now. Yeah, give me Pitt. Yeah, give me Pitt. And I now that we're talking about it, I feel pretty good about it too. So yeah, give me Pitt.
Did you want Pitt in this game, or were you going to pick Tennessee?
No, I want Pitt. Give me Pitt.
Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One last call for picks on the Tennessee and Pitt game. Who did you want in that one? Pittsburgh, right?
Is that what you said? I hate your face so much. Just
double checking. So, all right. Very good. Well, those are the picks for the weekend. Any other games that you're interested in for the upcoming slate of contest around the world of college football? I have a name right in front of me, but I'm going to...
Like the games we talked about, the ones that I have been pretty much on my mind that I'm excited to sit down and watch.
All right. Well, let me make sure there's not one that I don't want to point out.
Yeah, that's fine.
Ooh, Ohio State and Arkansas State. There we go. Utah has Southern Utah, just for reference, after their loss. Memphis and Navy. Could be interesting if you're not doing anything else. I don't believe. Did you see the attendance at UCLA's game this past weekend?
Yeah, it was bad.
Ooh. East Carolina and Old Dominion. Old Dominion got Virginia Tech over the weekend, and East Carolina, obviously, we already talked about them. So there's going to be an interesting one there. Yeah, I do think. Now, there is UAB Liberty. UAB had a nice moment over the weekend with Bill Clark. I think he was the sort of an honorary captain for them in that ball game over the weekend. So UAB and Liberty could be an interesting one. Oh, did you see Deion Sanders and Jackson State over the weekend? His son was like perfect for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I did.
There is Oklahoma State and Arizona State.
Meh.
Number 11, Oklahoma State and Arizona State.
Oklahoma State should win that game.
Say again?
Oklahoma State should win that game.
And Oregon State and Fresno State. I think that would be the only other interesting game.
Yeah.
There. Well, Robbo,
yeah.
If that's all you've got, that's all I've got for episode 104.
Yeah, man. Great weekend ahead. Can't wait. Cannot wait for what's to come.
All right. Be sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll catch you on the flip-flop. Later.